In this world we live in, there's runners and there's fighters. All your fists is on fighter, and I know one when I see one.
Oh, I'm excited about this. So this step of the podcast comes from an article that I saw when I came back from the New Year's. There was an article on CNN that was called, just the headline read, New Year's Resolutions for Couples. Obviously, very intriguing. I think hits home with a lot of people. Hey, we want to be better in our relationships. How can we be better for our partners? So obviously, I clicked on it and started reading through, and it was some really interesting stuff that seems very basic, but the way that Dr. Ian Kerner dives into some of these things was really, really interesting. So I contacted him, and he was so great. Gracious to come on. And Dr. Ian Kerner is a licensed psychotherapist, and he's nationally recognized as a sexuality counselor who specializes in sex therapy, couples therapy, and working with individuals on a range of different relationship issues. And he's been everywhere. I mean, you're talking about the Today Show, Dr. Oz, NPR, featured in the New York Times, USA Today. The list goes on and on. The guy knows what he's talking about, obviously. So we talked about some of those things you can do as your resolutions for couples. It became like a mini little therapy session for me at some point, but there's a lot of really great information, and we kicked it all off with just talking about arguing, how to argue. And I have the link to the article inside the description for the podcast, as well as his social media and everything that you need to know about Dr. Ian Kerner. Really interesting stuff. So here he is, and thanks for listening. Hi, Dr. Ian Kerner. This is Scotty. How are you?
Scotty, how are you?
Good. I'm glad. I appreciate you being here.
Yeah, my pleasure. Happy to.
I know you're traveling a lot, so I appreciate you taking some time and chatting. I had to hit you up right away as soon as I saw this article, because you put out this article on CNN that was talking about New Year's resolutions for couples, and I was like, oh, yeah, let me fix some things in my life. It was like the perfect timing for this, too, and I'm sure that was by design as well.
Yeah, look, I think the New Year is always a great time to kind of take stock and look at your relationship, and a lot of my patients were watching this movie called, I guess, A Marriage Story, which is actually about a divorce, and so I thought it was a good opportunity to kind of, you know, write the article and help people come up with some goals for their relationships, because I think relationships are really hard to maintain.
Yeah, yeah. Well, aren't they? They're supposed to be, right?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There was one of my favorite studies, Scotty, sort of looked at why do some relationships succeed and others fail? Like, what's the difference between success and failure? And what this study came up with, I mean, they looked at hundreds of couples. They watched video. They listened to audio. They even monitored, like, blood pressure levels and stress hormones. And what they came up with was that the couples who did better and who succeeded in their relationships had a higher ratio of positive to negative interactions, meaning that even when they were arguing, even when they were upset, even when they were fighting with each other, they somehow managed to do so in a more positive way. And the ideal ratio that they came up with of positive to negative interactions was 5-1. So I think it's pretty hard to stay in that 5-1 zone.
There's about 8 different things on this article that you came out for New Year's resolution. Some of them hit me hard directly, but since you were talking about arguing, let's talk about that one. Because I always felt like arguing correctly came down to respect, and that's what this resolution was actually titled. It's called Argue Respectfully. Can you touch us, how do you do that?
Yeah, I mean, I think arguing respectfully, feeling like you're an equal with your partner, being able to listen to your partner. I think part of the thing that happens when we argue is that, very often we get triggered and we become a little defensive. We also often go into that fight or flight mode. So some of us actually fight harder when we're in arguments. Some of us actually self-silence and sort of bottle up and withdraw. So I think the main thing to arguing respectfully is probably understanding that, you know, very often you're getting triggered and you're getting put into this kind of, you know, defensive place. And rather than focusing on defending yourself, think about what you're defending. Probably something that's kind of vulnerable, right? You only defend when you need to defend something, and that's when there's something vulnerable there. So I often encourage people to try and just, you know, get to their vulnerable place in an argument. Do you feel hurt? Do you feel sad? Do you feel rejected or neglected? Bring that to your partner instead of, I hate you, or you always do this,
right,
or you're still the same person you were 10 years ago. You're just like your mother, you know? Those kinds of
which is probably the worst thing you could ever say in an argument.
If you're just like your mother and your father?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
You know, it's such a chord. So I'm engaged now, and that's something that I've found the biggest difference in the way my fiance and I argue now compared to before. Is I realized that most of the time when we get in bad arguments is because I was really insecure about something. And
that's so interesting, Scotty. And do you ever just stop and say for a second, hey, I'm sorry I got like a little like heated up there.
Yeah.
I guess I'm feeling insecure. That's such a vulnerable thing to feel insecure. Do you share that with your partner now?
Yes. That is the only time our arguments are productive is when
we get
to that place.
That's right. Right, and how does she treat your vulnerability when you bring it to her?
Yeah, I mean she's great about it. I mean she really is. She's a person that can step back. I'm very emotional, right? Very reactive a lot, and you know we learn those things about each other as we go. But I think learning how to have those arguments.
Totally. You know what else is interesting is I think a lot of people think that an argument sort of begins and ends with "I'm sorry," but if you can sort of say. I'm sorry, and here's what I'm sorry actually for. I'm sorry that, you know, I got escalated, or I'm sorry I was sarcastic, or I'm sorry I walked out of the room, or I'm sorry I hit that wall. That's
right.
Great. First, being able to own your own behavior, but then to really say, here's how I felt. Like, I felt, like, insecure. And to be able to have a conversation about that underlying feeling is actually how you repair out of an argument. And I just want to say that word again, repair, because I mean, I've worked with thousands of couples, and it's interesting, not a lot of couples really know how to get out of an argument
right.
and how to repair from the argument. And so things just sort of peter along until they're okay again, for example.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. The more you think about it, like, and you think about the arguments you have, they go probably right along those lines. You know what's interesting is, as you were talking about the insecurities and talking about, hey, this is how I felt, the other side of that is that I learned in these arguments is if somebody says, hey, I felt this way, you can't go, well, that's not what was happening. And am I wrong in saying you can't delegitimize your partner's feelings just because those feelings weren't your intentions?
I mean that's the essence of gaslighting, you know, which is basically to start to make somebody feel crazy
right.
and they can't even trust their own feelings or emotions. That's not what's happening. You're just being like a suspicious person, or you're just being a paranoid person, or you're just falling into your usual set of behaviors.
Right.
You absolutely have to validate your partner's feelings and thoughts. You know, a relationship is an overlapped space between two individuals, and I think you have to be able to like really respect where your partner is coming from as an individual.
Yeah, I'm sure we could probably talk for an hour about how to argue and arguing respectfully. But I do want to hit on some of these other ones that you guys brought up. Can we go through a couple of those just to see what...
Sure.
Can we just start with making time for each other? Because I know that as we all get busy and the new year hits you get lost in these time warps of work and whatever, and family and the holidays and you just don't have time for each other. Can you touch on how to make time for each other?
Yeah,
why that's important.
I think it's important to make time for each other and keep the story of your relationship growing and expanding. I think one thing that I've noticed is that a lot of couples complain about each other's sort of digital technology use, whether it's phones or laptops or social media, Instagram. So I mean, very often we are in the same room with each other, and we may even be having a conversation with each other, but we're not necessarily spending quality time with each other.
Guilty.
or really being present with each other. So, I grew up in a generation, I've been with my wife now for about 20 years, and, we didn't really start off with, like, these iPhones in our hands and, hashtags and Instagram. And I think really being able to get face-to-face and eye to eye, and not just sort of what I call sort of like side by side, but on a phone, isn't really making time for each other.
Yeah, that really puts a visual into it. It gives you a feeling when you're sitting side by each other. You're not they're looking at each other. It's a that's a really interesting way to put that. I like that. Well, and that goes right into one of the other resolutions that you had on here that personally struck a chord, because I will get called out by my fiance, which I love her because she calls me out all the time on things, but she will say, hey, be present, be here with me. And that was one of your things too, because I do find myself even in the same room or having a conversation, my mind is in 1,000 different places and I have to like consciously be present.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons I love being a therapist, is because I sit with somebody in a room and I stare them in the eye and I just, you know, get to speak to them and talk and have that back and forth. And I really do think it's something that we don't know how to do anymore. And we kind of have to train ourselves. It's actually called the process of entrainment, when you become like connected to somebody through a conversation or through kissing them or doing something that has a kind of a, you know, a rhythmic flow to it, listening to music, dancing, you know. So I think it is a practice, right? Like a relationship, being present is a practice. It's something that you develop and cultivate.
I have a question though. Since, I mean, as we are in different times, do things evolve? Like, we do a lot of things, like we share certain things, like a show together, right? We have a certain show that we like to sit down and watch together. Is that something that is falling under those categories, our way of bonding and sharing something, or is that different than actually having a conversation?
I think that's different. I mean, I come back to this idea of face-to-face communication and side-by-side communication.
Yeah.
And I didn't mean to totally diss side-by-side communication, like taking a walk together, watching a show together, going to a movie, going to a museum together.
There's still value in those things.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that there's a certain kind of like ease where you're kind of next to each other and you're experiencing life together. Mm. I just think you have to complement and add face-to-face communication to the side-by-side. So this is all about adding, not taking away. If you and your wife, you know, have a great show that you watch and you enjoy it, and maybe you can talk about it. Maybe that will actually inspire some of the conversation you have. But if you think of a blend of sort of a ratio between side-by-side and face-to-face, that's kind of where you want to be.
Great point. I love that, the adding and not taking away. But can you talk to me about this going into the basement? I thought this was a really interesting take on how a relationship is like a house, right? Can you explain that?
I talk a lot about that in my practice, that a relationship is like a house in that there's a main floor, and most of us are sort of living on the main floor. We are, you know, going to work, coming home, we're dealing with bills, we're dealing with kids, we're dealing with in-laws and family, we're dealing with health issues, maybe we're getting to be nice to each other and make a little love, or maybe we're not, and life just sort of like happens on the main floor over and over again, day in and day out. That's what we're doing, is living up there on the main floor. And what I often say, though, is that there's also a basement. And, you know, down in our basement sometimes is where we have those more vulnerable emotions, or we have our fears. Sometimes we have our history, things that have happened to us that affect the way we are in a relationship. Sometimes there's stuff that we're really bringing from our own past and our childhoods. And I think we have a basement where we sort of put some of our more vulnerable, primary, and kind of like fragile emotions and feelings and memories. And down in the base, you know, up on the main floor of life, things are sort of organized in a linear way by the hands of time, you know, one moment after the other. But, you know, down in our basement, you know, we may have a wound that's very in the present that exists, you know, right next to something that happened in our own, in our childhood, for example. So there isn't necessarily that same chronology. And I think it's important as couples to sort of look at sort of like not just live up on the main floor in the moment, which is something that I know we're under pressure to do, but to actually look at like the basement. And is there any kind of underground in this relationship? Are there really things that you're avoiding, things that you know you've sort of like put down there that you kind of need to explore?
You know, I love that analogy. One of the other things here in the article, you had envisioning your future together. How congruent do your futures or your idea of what the future looks like have to be before it's a problem?
Well, I mean, I think in many ways we pick people who are different than us because people that are different than us also represent, you know, opportunities for growth and change. But, you know, with that growth and change, there can be a lot of friction and differences and differences in values and goals. I think the essence of a relationship is being able to collaborate, being considerate of your partner, being willing to compromise. I mean, you've picked this person to be your partner in life. If you're ever going to really know somebody and all their idiosyncrasies and compromise and collaborate, it's going to be for that person. So I do think we need to bring a lot of space and flexibility into a relationship. On the other hand, I do work with couples where, you know, there are impasses or discrepancies that really come down to core values, like having kids or really where we're going to, you know, live or sometimes a religion. So there are sometimes times where it's very, very difficult to collaborate or compromise, especially if we feel like something that we value is really being taken away from us. But I guess it comes back to that idea of being respectful to each other. I think if you're respectful and collaborative and willing to compromise, I compromise every, I've been married 20 years and I compromise every day for my wife. I don't try and make her more like me. I just try and more accept her for who she is.
Are there, should there be boundaries on how much you compromise? Like at what point do you, can it make you unhappy? Because I do feel like, and I know you don't know a lot about me, but recently my whole life changed. Last year, we lived in another city. We got engaged. I quit my job. We moved back to Chicago because that's where my son was, and I was traveling every other weekend. So to put my life together and everybody in one place, we moved to Chicago, and then we could kind of start our real foundation and continue on here. So there were a lot of compromises on her end, and some of them were even things that whether she, I know that there's still some like scared that these were the right decisions or not, but all this trust is in me, which I love that about her, but it also one is a lot of pressure for me also to make everything work. So not to try and like get my own therapy, but I do think that sometimes like at what point do you say, hey, I can't compromise on all of these things anymore?
Well, let me ask you, do you think that she feels in the end, treated fairly by you? Is she resentful of you for some of these choices that had to get made?
I don't think it's resent, but I do think there's an awareness of doing something that might be less than ideal for her.
Yeah. I mean, I think you have to like, you know, also, I often ask, you know, couples I'm with, and when I'm with one of the individual partners on their own, I sort of say, you know, call up an image of your partner right now in your mind, you know, from this morning or from yesterday, you know, bring up an image of your partner, and they'll do that. And I'll say, well, is that image? Do you love your partner? Do you feel loved by your partner in that image? Do you feel resentful of that image? Do you feel that partner that you're calling up in your head is always responsible for something that's going wrong or for ignoring you in some way? So, I mean, I think you have to like check in with your own internal image of your partner. And I think if you feel that things are fair and you feel loved, it sounds like, you know, your partner, your fiance made some real compromises for you. And, you know, I hope that, I mean, not to say that there's a ledger in a relationship, but, you know, one day you may have to make some compromises for her.
Sure, yeah, and I think being aware of that is obviously something that I've tried to be hyper-focused on, is knowing, hey, everything is new for her. This is all home, and this is all where my footprints are, but everything is new for her, so there's definitely some being aware of that.
You know what, Scotty? I bet you in her mind, she's mainly sort of the things that come to mind for her, the changes, that she's had to make, and I bet you when she thinks about you in the relationship, maybe she does think about some of the changes that she's had to make, and I wonder if she really knows that you experience sort of a sense of pressure around, okay, I asked you to make these changes, and now I have to, like, make sure everything's going amazingly. That is really, you know, a sense of pressure, and life is filled with ups and downs and conflict. So to me, that's an example of going down into the basement. Hey, up on the main floor of life, you know, we made these changes and we're doing it, and it came with these logistical and practical challenges. I just want you to know, when I go down into the basement on this, like, I feel a little bit of a sense of pressure and fear that, you know, I may be judged for this in some way.
Is it a good measure of if you've compromised too much or something that you didn't want to compromise is if it's met or ultimately results in resentment? Is that a good, like, scale internally?
Sure. Are you resentful? Do things feel fair? I think, you know, the problem that I see with so many couples that end up getting, you know, separated or divorced is that they have a story in their mind of what's happening in the relationship and happening to them in the relationship, you know, and they often haven't shared that story with their partner. So, you know, what I would hope with your fiance is that she doesn't have this story, like, when things start to get tough, I did everything for Scotty, I moved for Scotty, I uprooted my life for Scotty, and it was always Scotty, 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 and it was never about me. Like, that would be one version of a story that could develop. But that story, she should be able to invite you in. You should be able to talk. Whatever story you each have about the other, you should be able to share on a daily basis so that you have the opportunity to correct. You know, I went to my wife very recently. I said, you know, I feel like I'm doing way more of the chores lately at home, and I'm starting to resent it. And that had actually been going on for about 6 weeks, because she travels a lot for work. Mm. And so when she's away, I do a lot of the chores, but then she was coming back and not really picking up her share. So I didn't wait 2 years to tell her that until I was ready to divorce her. I told her that pretty much when I was really becoming aware of the resentment around it. And she thanked me for it, and you know what? She's making a real effort now.
So not only going into their basement, but bringing them into your basement is super key to all that.
Totally.
Yeah. And that's exactly what you're talking about. This last part I just want to touch on is the putting your relationship first. But the biggest, you know, thing that stood out is exactly what you said is finding, demonstrating like equality between not only responsibilities like the chores and dishes, but also just whether it's initiating sex or managing finances. Can you touch just on that before we wrap up?
Well, you know, I think that we have so many different parts to our lives and to our personalities that once we are in a relationship and we're no longer about trying to make that relationship happen anymore, I think it's really easy to lose the thread of the relationship and to focus on our kids or to focus on work or to focus on all of the tasks. And I can't tell you how many couples I work with who say, like, I feel like we've just lost each other, kind of. And that makes you vulnerable, because if somebody, like, walks up to you and suddenly sees you and wants to validate you and give you all that attention, that really feels great and rewarding. So we have to be able, you know, to make sure that we are keeping the story of our relationship, you know, fresh and alive, and that we're not losing the thread of our relationship.
Man, I feel like I could we could go down rabbit holes of these conversations for hours and hours, but I just appreciate you calling in and having this chat, because I found even just the headline of your title, the title of your article, obviously by design, very eye-catchy, and then you click in and you dive deeper and you really start to think about the way you interact with your partner more than just the things that you're doing for them or for yourself, but the actual interaction before. So thank you so much for opening up on some of these.
Hey, my pleasure, Scotty. Good luck with everything. Good luck with the relationship. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening. Feel free to share the podcast with your friends, and let's be friends on social media @ScottyK on air across all social medias.